The first time I stared at the rugged exterior of the Great Pyramid of Giza, the largest of man's accomplishments in stone, I was filled with awe at the enormity of the monument. Now, just hold a minute. I'm going to check something behind me out of the books I have here. I want to show a picture to those that have never looked. I don't mind you seeing the back of my head on shortwave. I have a picture I want to show you. Here we go. Here's a nice cross section the cameraman over there can put up on that little tripod and take a picture of that. I'll get a couple others here that I want to show you. Here they are in a sunset shot. The camera in front of me can take that picture. As they stand on the Giza Plateau in the center of Egypt. Some people work hard trying to figure out programming. I just make it up as I go. I want a good shot from one of these books. No, the Pyramid of Giza, the main one. These are the times it's fun to be listening on shortwave because you can't figure out what the hell I'm doing. Here's a nice aerial view of the three of them. I don't know if this will zoom in close enough or not. Sitting on the plateau of Giza, the largest being the so-called Pyramid of Khufu, that he didn't build it. Here we are again with another view. I'll be referring to the Sphinx tonight. It's as long as a city block, just short of the length of a football field, 60 feet high. Here's another shot of the three. I still haven't found the one I want. Picture's worth a thousand words. Here they are towering behind the oases in the area. I still haven't found the one I want. What I'm really doing is giving you time to call your friends. Tell them I'm back on the pyramid. Here's a shot that shows the perspective of the three, with the Pyramid of Khufu looming over the other two. The small grave pyramids around it, there is no. The Great Pyramid was not a tomb, no body in it, no hieroglyphics, except the forged ones of Colonel Weiss. Here, this is not the picture I was looking for, but it's good enough. You can put on the tripod over there. And one more. place to look. That'll have to do. As I was saying, those monuments are the subject tonight, particularly the last of the seven wonders of the world, the so-called pyramid of Cheops or Khufu, depending upon the Greek or Egyptian name. The first time I stared at the rugged exterior of the Great Pyramid of Giza, the largest of man's accomplishments in stone, I was filled with awe at the enormity of the monument. At the same time, I was appalled at its condition and the state of the immediate environment. Now, you may say, what book are you reading from? This is mine. No, you can't get copies because going to be redone and republished. The Great Pyramid, man's, it's my copyrighted material. The Great Pyramid, man's monument to man, had been stripped of its original beauty and perfection. Now it was littered, vandalized, trampled, and urinated upon through ages of ignorance and apathy. That ought to tell you it's mine. Most writers don't know how to tell you what's really going on. I had come to Egypt to explore this ancient structure. The visit to Giza convinced me beyond a doubt that our standard textbooks and the accepted legends of the Great Pyramid are all erroneous. However, even as the academicians are wrong in saying this magnificent monument was built as a tomb for a pharaoh, so too are the mystics and occultists wrong in many of their notions. The purpose of the Great Pyramid is very clear to me, and it's amazingly profound. As I clambered over the huge stone blocks ascending the pyramid, I amazed my Arab guide by stopping and staring and looking at things that he didn't think were interesting. Despite the vandalism and the centuries of erosion, the evidence of Masonic perfection was obvious. The tremendous differences between the Great Pyramid and its neighbors on the plateau were obvious. Standing near the original structure and studying the ancient stonework, I recall a story I'd heard. A modern contractor boasted of how modern methods and equipment could make the building of the Great Pyramids, or the Great Pyramid, child's play. I wondered how a builder could possibly be accurate enough in his assessment of modern workmen and machines, and how they would go about placing the more than 2.3 million blocks of stone atop one another. If I didn't have enough books here tonight, I just got two more. In my mind's eye, I tried to visualize an army of hard hats working with cranes and forklifts and trucks, perhaps even a railroad spur, giant helicopters even. I visualized the signal whistle and the pay line, the engineers and the union bosses. No. No way. We don't have a construction firm today that could handle the job. Hell, we have trouble enough building a section of highway without numerous change orders, material delays, and reevaluation of cost estimates, not to mention union restrictions. I felt the limestone blocks and foolishly tried to count them. I stood at the base of each corner and noted that as much as 30 feet of masonry had been peeled off the original corners. It was easy to see why any theory based upon the exterior measurements was controversial. It would require geometry to develop any accuracy. I even climbed to the top. That's against the rules, but a small bribe to an Arab guide and a start in the quiet early morning hours got around the problem. From the top, the view is gorgeous. Spectacular. Later, while exploring inside, I rushed to the huge blocks of granite that blocked the first ascending passage. The entry is forced around these blocks. One of the keys in the expert's argument is whether these 3 or 4 ton granite blocks could have been skidded down the 130 feet of the narrow passage. Orthodox Egyptologists say that's what happened. Get me a camera, Darrell, over on this. Come over here. On this diagram of the pyramid. Zoom in on the King's Chamber and then zoom out a little. I'll guide you. Hurry it up. Zoom out. Now go down the Grand Gallery. Zoom out to the narrow passage. Go on down to the granite plug. Stop right there. Now, when the Arabs entered, they couldn't get into that first ascending passage because it was blocked with this granite plug. 3 or 4 ton granite blocks, 6,000 to 8,000 pound granite blocks, which the Orthodox Egyptologists say, were skidded down that 130 some feet of that passage to block it. Allegedly after they buried somebody there, and then they skidded this down to keep anybody from getting up there. Engineers, architects, and I contend it's not possible. I noted that less than a 16th of an inch of clearance existed all the way around the block. You want to cut an inch into 16 parts? And they skidded it down that ascending passage to keep somebody from going looking at a dead body. And the Arabs couldn't get through the granite. It was so tough. They had to dig through the granite that surrounded over that granite thing and into that ascending passage to continue their way upward. And that's the way you get up there now. You go through the dugout section that the Arabs dug through the granite, through the limestone, to get around that granite plug. That happens to be the point in the timeline in the pyramid that marks exactly the date of the Exodus out of Egypt. And the granite plug is there to symbolize they couldn't go up that ascending passage without miracles provided by God to lift them out from the clutches of the dragon star that dominates that downward passage. But that's a later subject. I noted that less than a 16th of an inch of clearance existed all the way around the block. Not enough clearance to slide the blocks into place from above. Although it's not a key issue at this point of the descriptions I'm presenting, there's a great deal of interest in the stories of mystical experiences enhanced by spending a few hours alone in the main chamber. Go back to the picture you have there. Get past the granite plug, which is now available by a passage dug through the granite, through the limestone around it. Then you must stoop going up the ascending passage. So go on up the ascending passage. And on the timeline, which I'll talk about later, exactly at the resurrection point to the day when Christ came out of the tomb, the passage opens up in that grand gallery where you can stand erect. Zoom in on the numbers there. Can you read that? What is it? 286.1 pyramid inches, it opens up. Now, they took all this trouble to bury somebody the Arabs go back to the entrance into the side of the pyramid, zoom out really quite a ways. Go past the granite plug and up the ascending passage, although it was descending. When the Arabs tried to enter the outside of the pyramid, it was covered with limestone. They tore all the, beautiful white limestone blocks. They tore them all away to build the mosque in and around Cairo. But as explorers and engineers and pyramidologists over the years continued to study this massive structure, they were able to dig down in the sand to the base of the pyramid, where some of the limestone blocks that used to cover all four sides of it are still in place, and thus they could project the true angles and shape and size of the pyramid when it had its limestone blocks intact. But when the Arab who broke into it started the work, he assumed it would be somewhere in the middle, and he missed it, even though there was a door so tightly fixed that you couldn't see it on the outside. They only discovered it after they broke inside. He started right in the middle of the pyramid and missed the descending passage because it's offset to the left. We get our word sinister from the Latin word for left. It was offset, missing the mark, to the left, 286.1 pyramid inches. Now, what's a pyramid inch? Exactly, we can measure it now with scientific satellites and instruments, exactly 1/500,000,000th of the distance from the north to the south pole through the axis of the earth. Not north magnetic pole. True north is based upon a star that changes about every 2,000 years, called the North Star. It's now the tail of the Little Dipper, Polaris. The pyramid was built to coordinate with a date in a 26,000-year precession of the equinoxes, when at the fall equinox, go on out to the Dragon Star, zoom out, the Dragon Star, Thuban, in the constellation Draconis, was the North Star. And as you descend down this passage, come back to the passage, stop there, the limestone blocks, their joints are obviously vertical, like the arrow by the word scored lines. But in the descending passage, you come to a point where there are marker lines drawn on the sides and the top of the passage that are not vertical but perpendicular to the floor of the descending passage. Now, we just joined some people at the 10 o'clock hour. I'm in the middle of teaching on the pyramid, and I'm not even going to catch you up. At that point where the arrow is, instead of the lines being the joints of the blocks vertical, there are scored lines put there marking a certain point in the descending passage, and they are perpendicular to the floor line instead of vertical to the ground. You extend those lines out into space at the same date that the Dragon Star shined to the bottom of the descending passage, and it hits Alcyon, going out to the star, Darrow, up, 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 to Alcyon in the Pleiades. Go back down to the passage. That crosshair marks a date in the precession of the equinoxes that's fixed. Taking one pyramid inch to a year, you then can start a timeline from that point, BC. You work down the passage one inch to a year on the floor, and you come to the ascending passage exactly at the date of the Exodus out of Egypt. You go up that ascending passage one pyramid inch to a year, and you come to exactly the date that Jesus rose from the dead, when the passage opens up 286.1 pyramid inches. Now, I'm way ahead of the story, And I intend to be ahead of the story just to bait you a little bit. It took a long time, scientists working with this. And the greatest scholar on the pyramid up until Adam Rutherford, N.D. Davidson, went there as an engineer and a scientist and a mathematician to prove there was no prophetic dateline in the pyramid, ended up writing the most convincing proof of it. Now, go on up, because I'm talking about the King's Chamber. It comes to the great step in the mid-1800s, up to the great step, and it turns flat. Then the kind of rock changes, that's why the color changes. You go under a dip there, right at the point of the First World War, and skipping over other significant dates, you hit the wall in the back and turn right, exactly 286.1 pyramid inches, and you come to the placement of the open coffin that never had a body in it, that in cubic space is identical to the Ark of the Covenant. And there are only a few buildings ever built that are built on this so-called sacred pyramid inch. The Ark of the Covenant, Solomon's Temple, Stonehenge, and this great pyramid. In this King's Chamber is where I am in this book right now. Though it's not a key issue, there is a great deal of interest in the stories of mystical experiences enhanced by spending a few hours alone in the main chamber. Another bribe, and I was allowed to spend the night inside the King's Chamber in silence. I spent only 2 hours in solitude, but it was enough to convince me that profound experiences indeed take place. But it depends upon one's definition of the mystical, whether they are indeed such. After catching my breath from the climb, it took me some time to come around to appreciate the situation. Alone at last. The huge granite sarcophagus, chipped and brutalized, captured my attention for a moment. And then I rested. I'm in the King's Chamber. For several minutes, my mind toyed with foolishness, and I tested the remarkable acoustics in the chamber. I'd like to record a sax solo there. Finally, I settled down and savored the magnificent silence. And I began to contemplate my presence in this place of grace. Unless a person has had the fortune to be taught history by one of those rare instructors who fears not to deviate from the textbook norm, he will have been taught that the Great Pyramid is merely the biggest of many such structures built by an egomaniacal pharaoh who sought immortality through entombment in these geometrical monuments. Even those few students who specialize in ancient Egyptian history get only a cursory review of the tallest building ever erected by man until the 20th century. Generally speaking, we're taught that the Great Pyramid was the crowning achievement of the dynasties in ancient Egypt, famed for building the massive tombs. We're taught that a ruler whose Greek name is given as Cheops, and whose Egyptian name was Khufu, had the huge monument built as a home for his mummified remains. This idea is accepted on the basis of very sketchy evidences and the writings of Herodotus, a Greek journalist who has been acclaimed the father of history. We're taught many things in school, and why should we doubt what we're taught by our own institutions? It was my high school history instructor who impressed me tremendously, and I wanted to be a history major in college, and was, for my bachelor's. The dogmatic overview of history I received in high school was so much a part of my thinking. I remember being quite upset when my first college history professor opened his initial lecture with, "We must always remember that history is precisely that, his story, and nothing more." He stressed how historians traditionally tend to color facts to suit their notions. Any king's chronicler, for example, would most likely bend over backward to make his employer look like a pretty good leader of men, whether this was true or not. Warped viewpoints of historic events over the years become generally accepted fact and tend, like a snowball, to continue to influence thinking. If one takes the time and effort to really study the Great Pyramid at Giza, the first conclusion must be that no people whose culture was only one step removed from the Stone Age could have possibly designed and built such a monument. In order to make the Great Pyramid fit the puzzle framework, a number of terribly obscure assumptions were made by the Egyptologists. If you read any of the standard texts on pyramid-building dynasties, you'll note that whenever the Great Pyramid is discussed, the material is usually prefaced with, quote, "Although there are no records, it is assumed that." It's also curious that this most remarkable... Am I boring you?
No, sir.
This most remarkable of all man's monuments is usually granted only a few paragraphs, while the other monuments, which no doubt were erected as tombs, are accorded entire chapters. The obvious difference is that while the Great Pyramid is the most fantastic, there's no basis in historic fact for a detailed discussion of its builders and purpose. The others have writings inside, and paraphernalia of the period were found inside. And some records were unearthed that describe the individuals responsible. The erroneous assumption that the Great Pyramid of Giza was a tomb for Cheops and nothing more, plus the assumption that civilizations did not exist prior to Sumer and Egypt, are the two grossest mistakes in all of man's recorded history. The generally accepted notion that mankind has no solid heritage beyond the digs of the ancient Middle East, and the civilizations before, capable of evolving mankind toward perfection, have not flourished, has retarded the overall consciousness that enhances character growth and harmony with the environment and true knowledge of history. The ancient Greeks wrote into the annals of history that the Great Pyramid at Giza was the first wonder of the ancient world. The genius of classical antiquity may have chosen more wisely than they themselves realized. There is no hard fact anywhere established that the Great Pyramid of Cheops was a tomb. All other pyramid-shaped monuments in Egypt were found to be tombs, so the Great Pyramid must be one. It's assumed. At this point, the controversy isn't important, so rather than stress what the Great Pyramid is not, let's review some of the things it is. First of all, there's no comparison between it and the others when it comes to size and precision of workmanship. The Great Pyramid is massive. If you visualize a 40-story building, First Western building downtown, if you visualize a 40-story building rising angularly from a 13.5-acre base, you get a good idea of the size of the structure. It has been estimated that the huge cathedrals of Milan and Florence, plus St. Paul's Basilica in Rome, plus Westminster Abbey, could be set inside the confines of the Great Pyramid's base. Were we to grind the pyramid, all of its stones, into gravel, we could lay a roadbed 18 feet wide and a foot thick all the way from New York City to Salt Lake City. The length of one side of its square base is more than 2.5 football fields. It would cover the Rose Bowl 2.5 times in length. Now, how many times in width? Each of the four triangular sides sloping upward from the base cover an area of 5.5 acres. The exterior above the ground is 22 acres of surface. That's the whole size of Silver Oaks Ranch that you see us ride and run and do everything on. And at one time, this exterior glistened in the sun like a brilliant jewel. White Tura limestone casing stones, finely polished, reflected light from the sun and the moon as did no other object ever built by man. Indeed, in the days of Abraham, you could see it glistening all the way from Palestine. The core masonry is made up of an estimated 2,300,000 blocks of limestone. The smallest of these blocks weighs nearly 3 tons, 6,000 pounds. These huge pieces of limestone were cut, roughly dressed, and fitted together with a precision unmatched in any other pyramid. Draw an inch right in front of you on a piece of paper. Just estimate it. You'll be close. Now take the pen or pencil you have and divide that inch into 50 parts. Just start making lines. See if you can get 50 lines in there. No way. You need optical instruments. Precision laser. Yet these limestone blocks, 5 by 7 at the end, were joined together, and the variation on the surface between the two limestone blocks joined together at the joints, 1/50 of an inch in 35 square feet. That's how closely they joined. The casing stones quarried and transported from somewhere were 100 inches thick and weighed up to 15 tons, 30,000 pounds. Again, these huge casings were fitted with an optician's precision, same variation, 1/50 of an inch. Some of them are still, with erosion, fitted so well that a business card cannot be inserted between the joints, obviously, 1/50 of an inch variation. Another mystery, the cement poured vertical, is so fine and amazingly strong that it boggles the minds of stonemasons today. The polished limestone blocks will fracture before the joints that have been glued together will come apart. Talk about super glue. Though less than 1/50 of an inch separates the blocks. There's such a difference in skill of the workmanship displayed between the Great Pyramid and the Second Pyramid that it's inconceivable that only one generation separated the two structures, as the Egyptologists would tell us, something never mentioned in standard texts. The Great Pyramid is big and well built. It's such a fantastic piece of work that it's caught the fancy of every thoughtful visitor for the past 5,000 years. More words of praise have been written about this monument than there are blocks of stone in its makeup. The vastness of the job is one of the unsolved mysteries still perplexing today's scholars. Most of the other mysteries are avoided by the learned academicians, but they do allow that they have no idea how people living in the culture we assume existed in Egypt at the time could have built such an edifice. For example, that the Egyptians cut the rough blocks of the core masonry with the bronze tools of the day, 1/50 of an inch variation in 35 square feet, is not conceivable. And that they hewed it out of quarries more than 100 blocks a day, 7 days a week, in order to finish the job in 62 years, which was the time of Cheops' reign. Then, of course, if they did it, the stones had to be transported to the building site and put in place. How did they manage to cut and dress the hard rose-colored granite blocks, which are said to weigh more than 85 tons each, transport them more than 200 miles to the site, put them in place, even harder to determine? Cheops or Khufu, according to the best guesses of modern scholars, ruled for only 23 years, not 62. This means his workers or slaves had to design, cut, transport, and fit all the core blocks at a speed of 300 per day, 7 days a week, in order to get everything ready during their boss's reign. The truth is, we don't know who, how, or when the Great Pyramid was built. Even the most dogmatic and pompous of Egyptologists is forced to admit he has no idea how the ancients managed to construct the Great Pyramid. Pyramids in general, and the Great Pyramid in particular, are far more ancient than Egyptologists have allowed. Recently, the Great Pyramid's remarkable orientation, it's aligned to true north, not magnetic north, true north, at a time occurring once in 26,000 years when the North Star of the dominant constellation at that time that it was built to coordinate with would shine down that north face passageway. True north is an accomplishment for a small building. To align this one so perfectly, recently the Great Pyramid's remarkable orientation became a matter of scientific speculation once again. The March 1973 issue of Science magazine pictured the Giza complex on the cover and featured an article by two foreign researchers who stated that the Great Pyramid is twisted slightly to the left or off true north by about 4 minutes of arc. The researchers reasoned that the original structure was perfectly oriented, so the slight misalignment indicates either a shift in the Earth's pole or a movement of the African continent. Now that's pretty heady stuff. Some unknown ancient builders living just a few generations after the Stone Age, coming out of the cave because their wife had a headache, with their stone axes, laid out this huge square-based monument so precisely that modern-day scientists will seriously consider that the continent shifted rather than that the workmen were inaccurate and built it with a twist to the left. Not only did these ancient cavemen with their stone axes, mad at their wives, with nothing to do, somehow figure out where true north is, which required a knowledge of the Earth's rotations around the sun, on its axes, and in relationship to the vault of the heavens, and the Earth wobbling on its axes like a compass that we draw a little circle with, drawing a circle through the galaxies until every 2,000 years an extension out into the heavens of that axis of the Earth will point to another galaxy and thus another North Star. Not only did they have the knowledge of that and line it up to true north, they accidentally selected the prime meridian and the Tropic of Capricorn as a location. Pick up a globe map of the Earth, use a piece of string to make the meridian, lying from North Pole to South Pole, through the spot where the Great Pyramid is. You will notice that you cross the greatest mass of land on the planet's north-south axis. The line going around the globe from west to east, or the pyramid's precise latitude, you'll see passes through more land mass than any other line horizontal. There are many people who believe that the Great Pyramid is therefore situated at the center of the Earth's land mass and exactly quarters that mass. Another happy coincidence to the poor frustrated caveman who had to do something other than kill his wife for her headache. The more you study the pyramid, the more it'll become apparent that whoever built it knew as much or more about this planet than we know today. The pyramid is also distinctly superior in regard to geometric precision. Long before Pythagoras, some pyramid designer knew about the 3-4-5 triangle and the 2 square root of the 5-3 triangle. Long before Archimedes traveled to Egypt and then returned to Syracuse and exclaimed, "Eureka," meaning "I found it," this caveman pyramid designer was aware of the universal geometric relationship between the diameter of a circle and its circumference. Pi, in other words. And the golden mean also, to skip along. Pi was supposed to be discovered in modern times. They designed the pyramid on the exact angle that makes it a pyramidal reproduction of a circle. And its geometric relationships convey the concept of pi. And why was it built? Well, that's one book. I'll read you another one. See what this old boy has to say. Starts out by saying the making of books there seems to be no end. The Great Pyramid of Giza has been for almost 5,000 years or longer incomparable. The Greeks named it the world's first greatest wonder. Let me show you what Rutherford had to say. Go ahead, him. I want to read the other one. The Great Pyramid reveals the spheroidical shape of the earth. That is, the amount to which the earth deviates from the true sphere, owing to what is commonly known as the flattening at the poles, but which is in reality is equatorial protuberance. The Great Pyramid reveals a knowledge of the precession of the equinoxes, the length of the earth's axes of rotation, the duration of the earth's mean tropical, solar tropical year, equal to the time the sun appears to make a complete revolution of the elliptic or the ecliptic taken from one vernal equinox to the next. 365.24 days, 2 days. Let me simplify this. Around the base of the pyramid, which it took modern cameras and ability to fly over to determine, the Great Pyramid is not square at the base, nor on its sides. It's concave. It curves in. Thus, there are three different measurements on the exterior of the pyramid. Each of those three measurements give you the exact time it takes for the earth to go around the sun in the regular calendar, to return to a place called perihelion when in its elliptical orbit is closest to the sun, which is the anomalistic year. And the third calendar, which is the time it takes to return to a fixed position in relationship to a fixed star, the sidereal calendar. And the three measurements around the base of the pyramid exactly note those three different calendars in the spherical activity around the sun that is the basis of our calendars. They obviously knew all three of those measurement units that represent the three calendars. I'm trying to find a picture of the concavity. I don't think I have it in this book. Or a diagram. Here is a little diagram of the pyramid inch from the North Pole to the South Pole through the axis of the Earth. The pyramid inch is 1/500 millionth of that distance. The ordinary working cubit is about 18 inches from the middle finger to your elbow. The sacred cubit is exactly 25 of these pyramid inches, which represent 1/500 millionth of the distance from the North Pole to the South Pole through the axis of the Earth.
This is the end of Side 1.